Hello, I am Trent Linesmith. It is Tuesday, October 5th, and this is another edition of the Come On Now MMA podcast. And here are the topics for today. Maybe it's time to pay Henry Cejudo and get him in that fight with Alexander Volkanovski. I explain why. Why I think Chael Sonnen's wrong that John Jones is being punished by being kept under contract by the UFC. I have some issues with the way Herb Dean spoke about why he did not stop the Brian Ortega and Alexander Volkanovski fight. And the MMA media dropped the ball. I want to maybe get them to ask Dana White some questions here, especially one about George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva. And lastly, Dana White saying that it's no longer shocking that John Jones gets arrested. It's kind of minimizing that John Jones gets arrested. And it's really minimizing and negating the seriousness of John Jones getting arrested for domestic violence. I speak about that. And now, on with the show. Henry Cejudo. It seems like there's not a fight card where someone maybe 155 pounds or below fights that Henry Cejudo doesn't somehow get involved and make a call out. And, okay, I understand that he wants to keep his name in the media. He wants to keep his whole shtick going. But sooner or later, the UFC is going to have to either accommodate Cejudo or tell him and tell the fans he's done, he's never coming back, end of story. And I'm of the mind right now that now's the time maybe the UFC accommodates Henry Cejudo. And here is what he said after he requested a fight with Alexander Volkanovski. I ain't no George St. Pierre where I'm going to go in there, cherry pick Michael Bisping, and then take off. I'm going to go up against the number 3 pound for pound best fighter, probably the greatest featherweight in history. I either beat him or I get my ass beat. I'm taking that chance. Commendable. And the shot at Bisping, I don't know if that was necessary, but you know, it's Cejudo, so he's going to do what he's going to do. The greatest featherweight in history, debatable at this point. I'd still give that to, well, I don't know who I'd give that to. You know, he got a few choices, but Volkanovski is going to be in that discussion for sure, if he's not already in that discussion. And I'm saying, you know what, now's the time. Let's make this happen. If for one reason, just to, you know, shut Henry Cejudo up is a good enough reason. So if I'm the UFC, what I'm doing here is I'm telling Henry Cejudo, all right, here's a one fight contract. You fight Alexander Volkanovski for the title, one fight deal. Here's the pay. And if you lose, you're done. And if you win, well, then you're screwed, but more or less if you're Henry Cejudo, because then you're locked in with the champions clause in the UFC deal. This is a no lose really situation for the UFC. If he fails, well, then you spent probably less than what he is worth because it's a one-fight deal. If he wins, then you have him locked up with the champions clause for X amount of fights, and you also have a built-in marketing plan because now he's the 145-pound champion, and you can market the hell out of Henry Cejudo. And I'll tell you what, he's going to market the hell out of himself too. So this is a win-win for the UFC. So I would say, why not do it? Why not give Henry Cejudo one fight deal? He fights Volkanovski. If he loses, you're done with him. But he's probably still under contract. If he loses, you're done with him. If he wins, you have him locked up with the champions clause at probably a reduced rate. And here's where I just need to say that this thing about Henry Cejudo, it's never been about Dana White, let me fight. It's always, and which is how Cejudo's kind of been approaching it, which smart because it kind of strokes White's ego and makes it look like White's not the one that's keeping Cejudo from fighting. But White is keeping Cejudo from fighting because this has never been about allow me to fight. This is about pay me what I'm worth to fight. You know, somewhat smart by Cejudo's approach here, but it's also an approach that we can all see through. White's not letting him fight. The only reason White's not letting him fight is because he's not paying Cejudo what Cejudo wants. Come to a deal for one fight, which makes sense for everybody. Book it. And then if he wins, UFC's got him locked up and over a barrel. Kind of the same situation Cejudo is in when he walked away from the UFC. So, yeah, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. So make it happen. Chael Sonnen said that if the UFC keeps John Jones under contract, it's doing the best thing it can for John Jones, and that it's more of a punishment for John Jones than anything. And I can see where he's coming from in that, but I also see that that's kind of a UFC side of take from Sonnen, which I'm not surprised by, because let's remember, he gets some paychecks from the UFC as well. So my problem with this is that Sonnen says that keeping on the contract more or less prevents him from fighting, which I'm not sure it does. The only way it does is if the UFC invokes the code of conduct and suspends John Jones. We have not heard anything about that. And so the assumption now is that John Jones is still under contract and under his normal UFC contract with no suspension in place. If there's a suspension in place, no one knows about it. So if he's not under suspension, then the UFC is under contract to extend him three fight offers per year. There's nothing from stopping John Jones from accepting any of those offers, even if they are terrible, even if they make no sense. There's nothing stopping John Jones from accepting those offers if they are contractually made, and they must be, or else the UFC will be in breach of his contract. And so keeping him under contract doesn't really punish him unless the UFC suspends him, which I'm all for, but they have not made that announcement. They have not spoke about the code of conduct. They have not done anything of the like. So my assumption in this matter is John Jones under contract. Contract has to be offered X amount of fights a year. Nothing stopping him from accepting a fight. So that is where I find a little fault with Chael Sonnen. What I also find some fault in here is that if the UFC releases him, the shame and the embarrassment that is attached to signing John Jones will drive his value to the seller, if he has any value at all. I'm sure some promotion will offer him something, but if it's, you know, bare knuckle or some other smaller organization, I don't know if Jones's pride allows him to take that kind of pay cut. We know one championship likes to think of itself as some high and mighty martial arts organization that would never, you know, associate itself with this kind of person. So I would think they would be out of the running. I would like to think that Bellator would not sign him just because of the stink that's attached to him, and the ownership group of Bellator might not be into that, but I don't know. But the truth is, whoever would sign John Jones or extend him an offer would be doing so at a rate that is extraordinarily lower than what he got for his last fight or what he will get for his next UFC fight. And that was be because the shame attached with signing John Jones to your organization. So I don't think that the UFC keeping him is the biggest punishment it can have, or that he can have. If the UFC suspends him, pending some kind of help or whatever, or pending the outcome of the trial, which will probably drag on for quite a while if it goes to trial, well, then yes, John Jones staying under contract with the UFC is a decent punishment. If he's not suspended, though, it's not a punishment at all. It's just a matter of John Jones waiting to accept what the UFC offers him for his next fight. So that's just being under contract as a UFC fighter. That's not punishment at all. That's just how the UFC functions. Herb Dean has some things to say in his defense on why he did not stop the Brian Ortega Alexander Volkanovski fight at UFC 266. I thought the fight should have been stopped at the end of the third round, because Ortega failed a number of the tests that the doctor and Dean administered to him. And I think after that, at the end of the fourth, I think his corner should have thrown in the towel. But definitely at the end of the third, the referee and a physician should have stopped the fight. And let's go over a little bit of some of the things that Herb Dean said to Helen Yee about the fight and from that third round on. And here's what Dean had to say. I don't think his cornerman helped him. He was laying there. It wasn't getting up. I think it was more of a, hey, it's time to get up. Let's get moving. Because once they grabbed him, it was not like they had to lift him up. Once they put hands on him, he was getting up and on the stool. So if you watch the fight at the end of the third round, Ortega was spent, exhausted, no energy left when the horn sounded. And he just kind of collapsed or laid down or stayed laying down until his corner came into the octagon. It was a bad visual, I'll give you that. It was made worse by the UFC commentary, maybe being hyperbolic about how bad Ortega looked. When his corner came in, they kind of grabbed his arm, and it looked to me at least, if they helped him up, it was minimal. I think he got to the stool more under his own power. I think that time between the horn and when his corner got to him, I agree with Dean here. He was just spent. He was exhausted, and he was just catching his breath, catching air, and trying to get his wits about him. So I don't find anything really egregious there. If anything, that was probably the least of my concerns of what happened from that point on with Brian Ortega. And here is where my eyebrows raised a little bit when Herb Dean spoke about this next part. At the end of the round, it was exhaustion. He had given his all. Then the physician comes in, medically clears him. He says he's clear. Some of his answers weren't exactly clear. But then when he looked at me and gave clear answers like, yeah, yes, I can see, I want to continue, you could see he was ready to compete again. I'm going to pick this apart a little bit, one thing at a time. Some of his answers weren't exactly clear. That language is not exactly clear. Some of his answers were failing the questions he was asked. First thing he failed was he did not follow the doctor's finger when he asked him to follow it with his eyes. He did not seem aware of where he was, what was going on when the doctor gave them the walk towards me test that's administered at the end of a standing 8-count boxing. His gait was not good. He stumbled. He was distracted. He did not have his wits about him. He was not ready to fight. When Dean asked him how many fingers he had up, he didn't cover Ortega's good eye. And so that's just an eye test at that point when you have both your eyes. If you have one that's swollen shut, which we know he had a broken orbital, and the other one's still good, well, then of course you're going to be able to answer that, yeah, you have one finger up because I can see through my good eye. So Dean failed there. And I don't really care that he gave an answer that he said he wanted to continue or that he could see. It's not like MMA fighters don't lie to the doctors and to the referees on the regular. We know they do. They've said they have. They want to keep fighting. And if anyone wants to keep fighting, Brian Ortega wants to keep fighting. And that's where I have a problem. The biggest problem I have of what Dean said is where he said a fighter has the right to make the decision to continue. And that is absolutely not true or shouldn't be true. A fighter like Brian Ortega, I mean, you get these fighters who say, well, I'll fight to the death. I believe that in Brian Ortega. After what we've seen in his fights with Holloway and Volkanovski, I believe that he would keep going until he could no longer keep going. And at that point, yeah, he's going to say, I want to continue. We know Brian Ortega is going to say he wants to continue. He's like the Black Knight in the Monty Python skits. This guy is going to keep going and keep going. And that should not be allowed. The fighter does not have the right to decide if they want to continue. That's why the referee is there. That's why the doctor's there. If it was going to be like this, it would be a fight to the death every time. That's not the case. Herb Dean is there to protect Brian Ortega. And I wrote this before, and I will say it again. I think Herb Dean failed to protect Brian Ortega. And I think these words here and what he said, and especially this, that the fighter has a right to make that decision, those words prove that he failed to take care of Brian Ortega to fail to put health and safety first of that fighter. I would hope that Dean, you know, uses this as a learning experience, and maybe is a little quicker on the draw next time, or makes the call next time, because he did not make the call here, and I think he failed Brian Ortega. So this is just saw my notes. No one asked Dana White about Raquel Pennington and the help the UFC did or didn't offer her during her COVID-19 illness. And no one asked Dana White about Jakar Close, who is still out because Jeremy Stephens shoved him when White was trashing the Alvarez Plant shoving incident with left Plant with a cut. So come on, MMA media, do the work here. Those were questions that should have been asked. Speaking of the media and asking or not asking questions, when Anderson Silva had his last fight in the UFC and said he was done, the UFC released Anderson Silva. And I think I saw the story there. I think the language was the UFC stated that he would be released from his contract. So a question for Dana White here is, why was Anderson Silva able to get his release from his UFC contract? And why is George St. Pierre not able to get a release from his UFC contract? What's the difference? Why is one okay to release and one not? Again, this shows you the UFC makes decisions arbitrarily and makes them with the UFC's best interest in mind and not the fighters. So save me the pumping George St. Pierre's tires and giving him a state in the Hall of Fame. Release him from his contract. Do something meaningful for the man. John Jones' arrest. I just thought about this today, and I find this very bothersome. This is what Dana White had to say after the arrest. It's like it's not even shocking anymore. When we bring him here, it's almost expected, speaking of Vegas. You can't even get him in Las Vegas for less than 12 hours to induct him in the Hall of Fame. It's a problem. The guy's got a lot of demons. Is it really shocking anymore? It's really not. It's becoming not shocking. It's almost like, oh, this guy's in Vegas. What's going to happen today? You want to hope that the guy is better, and that won't be the case, but he proves that every time he comes to this town that he can't handle this place. First of all, Dana White either knows something that none of us know or is exaggerating here, because I think this was the only time that John Jones has been arrested in Las Vegas. So he's making it sound like every time he shows up in town, you know, the cops are waiting at the border with the bracelets. I don't know if that's true, but White is surely making it sound like John Jones has had a lot more run-ins with the Las Vegas Police Department than we know of. So maybe the media ask him about that. What are we missing here? What do we not know about John Jones being arrested or being in some kind of trouble in Las Vegas? And that's the first part and the minor part. What bothers me most about this is, it's this statement, it's not even shocking anymore. Is it really shocking anymore? So Dana White, knowing that John Jones was arrested for domestic abuse, is saying that's not shocking. And what this does is it normalizes John Jones's arrests and John Jones's, you know, domestic abuse here. When you say you're not shocked or it's not shocking, and then you repeat that, then that makes it seem like it's not a big problem. That John Jones getting arrested for domestic assault is not a big problem. It's not shocking anymore that he's getting arrested for hitting his fiance. It should always be shocking that John Jones got arrested for domestic violence. Every time a fighter gets arrested for domestic violence, it should be a shock to the UFC, to Dana White. To say that it's not shocking, even if it's not what you mean to say, even if you're saying that as the just a big picture thing, that it's not shocking that John Jones got arrested, to say it in any kind of relation to domestic violence is terrible. It also shouldn't be said, because it should shock you when someone in the UFC gets arrested. It should shock you when they get arrested for domestic violence. If you are accepting of these kind of behaviors, that it's not shocking, that normalizes the behavior, that reduces the crime, that reduces what the media and the fans are supposed to think of it. That's what Dana White's doing here. He's trying to negate the seriousness of this by saying, it's not shocking. What's so shocking about John Jones get arrested? It happens all the time. That's shocking. That it happened with domestic violence at this time is even more shocking. And if you're not shocked by that, maybe recalibrate what shocks and doesn't shock you, Dana White. That's all I have for today. I'll be back later this week. Everyone, stay safe.